beautiful except for the smell in the room right
now. Why can't you treat me with the respect to which I'm entitled?
Because you don't bring
like
things
any
that
stranger
smell.
On the street.
Bring something that smells good for once to eat.
Really? Really? That's the sort of respect I'm accorded. Whenever I open smells like ass, it does not smell like ass.
It smells like stale ass.
It is delicious. Would you like a bite? It's my salmon recipe. And Yes, I've already gotten, requests for the recipe.
You've gotten requests for
yes,
that?
Yes, because people can see it already.
Here's how to make stale ass.
Salmon ass.
I will stab you.
That really does smell
this
awful.
Is my sister Libby's recipe, and it is delicious. Mm. Here's what you do. I don't have it in front of me. And you can freestyle a little bit. But in a blender, you put orange juice and balsamic vinegar and shallots and salt and pepper, basil, Dijon mustard.
Mm-hmm. That's what I smell, the Dijon
right.
mustard. Yeah.
And then you blend it, and then you pour it over the salmon. You cook it 450 for like 12 minutes per inch of thickness, and then you pour it over it when you're done. It's delicious.
That's good salmonella.
I'm going to... All right, thank you. Say thank you, Libby.
Thank you, Libby.
All right. You're going to have a bite, and you're going to take it back, both of you. All right. Could be worse, Chris. I could have brought my burnt sauerkraut for Thanksgiving.
There you go. Could be worse.
Uh-huh. All right. So we have, because I'm trying to make them jealous, Michael Tomasky and Charlie Pierce on the same show today. Very, very
We're trying
exciting.
To lure them into a fight club.
Writer. Steffi favorite writer fight club.
That's right.
Do it. Get it. Fight, fight, fight. All right. And 1-800-STEFF-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. All right. So a lot of stuff going on. We're going to talk to Michael, wrote a piece about that NSA stuff and the changes the president's making. But, Jim, you were talking, and Chris, both of you yesterday about the Fourth Amendment, and I thought there are some parallels between the stop and frisk stuff and what's going on and the balance between privacy and security or, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of, and Jim, I don't mean to pick a fight yesterday, but I think even you would say you're not looking for total privacy, right? I mean, there is some balance, well, right, between privacy and security?
Of course, but
you can strike balance within the bounds of the Fourth Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I get that I don't want zero privacy and 100% security, but I also don't want, you know, I think there is that, and I think that's, honestly, and that's what Tomasky writes, I think that's what the president's trying to do is figure out what is that. What is the balance? But in the New York City one's an interesting one because Bloomberg is an interesting character. You have to say he's a Republican. And yet even we've said some of the stuff he does is nanny state, I think. It is big government. It's and I agree with him
the
about
big
secondhand
stuff, yeah.
Well, secondhand smoke and obesity, I agree with him. And a lot of the stuff he does works, but it's like, you know, it is obviously on the edge of what is permissible. What's too much big government? Mm-hmm. And the stop and frisk thing, I've heard a lot of people talking about. It is working if you're looking at crime statistics. But, you know, anyway, what just happened in repudiation of a major element in the Bloomberg administration's crime fighting legacy, a federal judge has found the stop and frisk tactics of the New York Police Department violated the constitutional rights of minorities in New York and called for a federal monitor to oversee broad reforms. This is like all the major stories we've been talking about right now rolled into one. Trayvon Martin. It's exactly what it's the president talking about. How many times as a black man he's experienced these things? We talked about the Oprah case yesterday. Mm-hmm. So it's everything is rolled into one here. They found that the judge found the police department had adopted a policy of indirect racial profiling that targeted young minority men for stops. Mayor Bloomberg said the city would appeal, angrily accusing the judge of deliberately not giving the city a fair trial. The mayor cited the benefits of stop and frisk, crediting the tactic for making the city safer and for ridding the streets of thousands of illegal guns. Well, there's where one of our other issues comes
right.
into play. For those of us like me that are really anti-gun, this is a really effective tactic. But anyway, in her ruling, Judge Scheinlund found that in doing so, the police systematically stopped innocent people in the street without any objective reason to suspect them of wrongdoing.
That's a problem.
The stops, which soared in number over the last decade as crime continued to decline, demonstrated a widespread disregard for the Fourth Amendment, which we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about yesterday. Michael Bloomberg yesterday talking about
that. We go to where the reports of crime are. Those, unfortunately, happen to be poor neighborhoods and minority neighborhoods.
But, you know, did you see this on TV? They put up on the Chiron a lot of these statistics, and more often, statistically, white people are the ones that have guns or contraband. I've got the numbers. We'll get to all that. But, Yeah, the Supreme Court had long ago ruled that stop and frisk were constitutionally permissible under certain conditions, and Judge Sineland stressed she was not ordering an end to the practice, but she said changes were needed to ensure the street stops were carried out in a manner that protects the rights and liberties of all New Yorkers while still providing much-needed police protection.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying the parallel strike me to the NSA thing and what trying to figure out, like, okay, changes need to be made. What's the balance? The judge found that New York police were too quick to deem a suspicious behavior what was perfectly innocent, in effect watering down the legal standard required for a stop. Blacks are likely targeted for stops based on a lesser degree of objectively founded suspicion than whites, she wrote. She found that in their zeal to identify concealed weapons, officers sometimes stop people on the grounds that they observed a bulge in the person's pocket,
mm-hmm.
which in some cases could be very embarrassing for a number of reasons.
or
oh, I'm sorry, sir. Yeah. Carry on.
Or they were smoking,
but that is impressive. Good job.
Or they were smoking a cigarette, and the cop said, "Well, that want to stop them to check to see if it's marijuana." You know, that sort of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, what she was talking about is the often it turned out the bulge was caused by not a gun but by a wallet. Mm-hmm. She wrote the outline of a commonly carried object such as a wallet or a cell phone does not justify a stop or frisk, nor does feeling such an object during a frisk justify a search. So, interesting stuff. She said no one should live in fear of being stopped whenever he leaves his home to go about the activities of daily life. And this is, again, where this whole Trayvon Martin thing came in. What, you know, you're walking with Skittles, and you happen to be unlucky enough to some doofy, you know, neighborhood watch wannabe cop who's armed mm-hmm. decides. I mean, this is, so, I mean, anyway. During police stops, she found blacks and Hispanics are more likely to be subjected to use of force than whites, despite the fact that whites are more likely to be found with weapons and contraband.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, check this out. Blacks and Hispanics were stopped 88% of the time, a disparity the police department has sought to explain by saying it mirrored the disproportionate percentage of crimes committed by young minority men. Judge Sineland wrote, this might be a valid comparison if the people stopped were criminals. Explained that there was significant evidence that people being stopped were not criminals. She said, to the contrary, nearly 90% of the people stopped are released without the officer finding any basis for a summons.
Prove to me
arrest.
That you're not a criminal.
Right.
Yeah, that's guilty before right. proven innocent. Yeah. That's not how we do things.
Targeting young black and Hispanic men for stops based on the alleged criminal conduct of other young black or Hispanic men violates the bedrock principles of equality. And, you know, clearly, you know, here we go again with the Zimmerman thing. It's because apparently some black kids had done some break-ins. You know, there you go. And now Trayvon Martin's dead because
right.
he clearly must have been the guy, right? Ray Kelly, New York City Police Commissioner.
There were 7,363 fewer murders in New York City compared to the 11 years prior to the mayor taking office. And if history is any guide, those lives saved were overwhelmingly the lives of young men of color.
Hmm.
That, see, there you go. So, you know what I mean? And it's the same arguments we're hearing about, you know, the article I read yesterday from the former intelligence guy that said, I can tell you without a doubt this intelligence has stopped terrorist attacks. I mean, it's, you know, so here we are again in the same kind of like, and how do you, what kind of changes do you make? You know, I mean, I don't know, Jim, I haven't asked you that specifically with the NSA stuff. What kind of changes would you make? How would you, and I'm not trying to be confrontational.
Well, I mean, I think they should, I mean, obviously if you're getting calls from Saudi Arabia or Yemen
right.
or something, it's going to raise some hackles and, you know, that needs to be looked into. But just to have this massive dragnet sucking
right.
up all the information and you know, possibly trying to entrap people with the information. And
well, Tomosky writes, too, though, and I'm cop, too, that, you know, do I trust more because it's Obama? Yes. Yes, more than George Bush. And Tomosky writes that he's probably the first president ever that who willingly given up powers once he has them.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's, you know, it's really an interesting site. I was sort of drawn by the parallels. Let's go to Brett in Louisiana. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Brett.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. Go ahead.
I was talking about this whole stop and frisk thing. And you know,
right.
years ago, my daughter lived in Houston with her mother, and I lived 200 miles away in Louisiana, and I had to travel back and forth every other weekend to visit my daughter. And I was pulled over numerous times by the drug task force because I was a guy in my late 20s and a old restored Mercedes-Benz, and I guess I just looked like a drug dealer. And it was aggravating, but I understand they have a job to do. But I think there's a big parallel between DWI checkpoints and stop and frisk. I mean, the police are stopping people on a public street and checking them out to make sure that they don't harm the public. What's the difference between that and DWI checkpoints, which targets a totally different demographic, but does the same thing?
Yeah, I'm more curious why you look like a drug addict. Well, what does a drug addict look or a drug dealer look like?
Like Ginger Baker.
Well, Highway 59 is a very well-known drug trafficking route out of Houston, Texas, from drugs coming up from Mexico.
Oh, I see.
And there's one little town where you have to go through this little loop to get on the highway, and the police would sit there, four or five cars side by side, and they would make eye contact with every person coming through there and anybody they deemed suspicious. You know, I doubt very seriously grandma's going to haul drugs, but I'm sure some do. But for the most part, you're looking at, you know, young white guys, young Hispanics, young black people. Young men are generally the people that haul drugs, you know?
Yeah.
And I was pulled over
I think anybody looks suspicious.
In my car, and they always let me go. And finally, I called the supervisor or the sheriff's office, and I said, look, you know, I come through there every other weekend. I'm getting tired of getting pulled over. I'm coming to see my daughter. I'm not hauling dope, you know? And finally, a sheriff's deputy gave me his cell phone number, said, if they stop you again, call us. And I never had any problems after that. But, you know, they got a job to do. They're trying to protect us. And if they don't protect us, you know, that's kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah. No, I get your points. I think anybody looks suspicious if a cop is making eye contact with you. Don't you? I mean, I'm a little lame-ass white girl, and I get nervous. I'm like, uh-oh.
Step away from the car. My cell phone down. What?
Oh. My cell phone down. Is my seatbelt on? Because sometimes I do that thing with the seatbelt where it's on, but I have it, like, you know, because I don't like it over my shoulder, so I have it there.
Well, then it doesn't work if it's not over your shoulder.
It's on. It's connected.
But, yeah, but it's going to chop you in half.
See what I'm saying?
See
what I'm saying? I see a cop, and I'm like, and I have to quickly, you know.
You shouldn't be afraid of the cop, because you should be afraid of yourself.
Getting chopped in half should you get in a head-on.
Like you two care. All right. You're like, at least the studio smells better.
Yeah, well, there's that.
All right. But then Jan Buehr would find my headless body in the desert, right? All right. 18 minutes after, and now you're worried that smells like ass.
Headless bodies?
Right. They prop me back up in the studio again.
Oh, God.
18 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call the Political Party Line now. 1-800-STEP-12. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 22 minutes after the hour. Everybody lining up for apologies about my salmon, which is delicious.
It's very good.
Jim made a yummy noise. Yes, he did. You're just being stubborn. You know it's good.
Oh, I'm never stubborn.
Never, ever, ever.
Ever, ever stubborn.
All right. 1-800 the salmon.
Don't tell me I'm stubborn. I'm not talking to you.
My salmon, which smells like ass, according to Chris, is delicious.
Well, when you first open the Tupperware, it's kind of, whoa.
Right.
Okay.
Like, did you make that with old eggs?
Like South Street Seaport in the middle of August. All right. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Oh, by the way, yesterday we talked about the rodeo clown.
Yes.
With the Obama mask.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And remember the thing that turned into a Klan rally? Where was it? Missouri?
Yes.
Where he repeatedly was saying, who wants to see Obama get run over by bulls? And everybody screamed and yelled. And,
that's right.
Right. And then another rodeo clown came and played with the lips on the mask. Because that's right. Okay, so guess whose fault, according to Rush Limbaugh, all that is that that happened?
Who?
President Obama.
Right.
It's his
fault? Because yes.
How?
Because, my friends, because he goes on the Tonight Show, he is, debates the presidency, so what do you expect is going to happen?
He's not the first president to go.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, normally I'm against domestic drone strikes, but I might make an exception in this case.
See? He's not an absolutist. Thank you, Jim. We're kidding, Newsbusters. Okay. All right. I was like, wow, I've heard quite a bit on that show, and I was like, really?
That's a stretch.
Because he's already debased the presidency by going on the Tonight Show.
I see.
As Jim said, many other, almost any of them.
Nixon went on Laugh-In.
Yeah.
Right, right.
You're talking to me? You reach a lot of people going on the Tonight Show.
Because he has disrespected the office of president, so what do you expect? This is... He's asking for this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Plus, he's Kenyan, Muslim, communist, Nazi, socialist.
Right, exactly. All right. We were talking about, as you know, I'm a well-known gun grabber.
You are.
From way back. So I, while I appreciate Mayor Bloomberg's thought in terms of getting guns off the street in New York, as we know, the stop and frisk rule has been, a judge has ruled it unconstitutional. Anyway, there. But I just thought, sometimes isn't it ironic, file just writes itself, Jim? You just showed me this during the break. Ohio gun safety instructor accidentally shoots student.
Isn't it ironic?
That is actually ironic.
Right?
Yeah.
An Ohio man was shot in the arm at a gun safety class.
And fortunately, a lot of these students were nurses.
Yes.
So
well, that helps.
Fix him up. Before,
right.
You know.
He was attending a concealed carry class with his wife in Central Ohio's Fairfield County over the weekend. He was sitting in the front row. I think this will teach you. Don't do that in the comedy club.
Right. Or gun safety class.
Right. While the instructor
see
was
don't do that.
Mm-hmm. While the instructor was demonstrating self-defense techniques, which that kind of is a way of demonstrating it, the gun went off. The bullet struck the arm. Even he didn't realize what had happened. Everyone was in shock, he told CNN. It took me a couple of seconds to realize that I had been shot at a gun safety class. The instructor did not return a call for comment, oddly enough. Really? Nothing? Yeah, nothing. Okay. All right. Robert in Albuquerque on the stop and frisk law. Hello, all Robert.
Well,
hi,
good
Robert.
Morning.
Hi.
This is, this Fourth Amendment violation stuff is near and dear to my heart. My daughter is Latina, and she was, she's an actor selling overpriced cupcakes on Rodeo Drive, and she was with a couple of her African-American coworkers, heading home and in a crappy car on Rodeo Drive, and they were stopped. Wow. And asked to get out of the car, searched thoroughly for no other reason than just being a crappy car on Rodeo Drive. And her African-American friend said, this happens to him at least twice a month.
Wow.
And that's nuts. I just think that's absolutely nuts for just having a lousy car on Rodeo Drive. I know there's crimes out there, but I didn't realize that
was one. It's actually a felony to drive a crappy car in L.A.
Yeah, I was just going to say, in our defense, Robert, it's and it's pretty high bar for what's considered a crappy car. I mean, I think I've known people with...
this is a 2008?
Right, Lexus that have been pulled over. They're like, what? You don't have a Jaguar?
I drive a 2006 car, and you should see the looks I get.
Right. Oh. As well you should. You are shady.
I know.
Roy in New York. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Roy.
Hi, Steph. Roy, how are you?
Yes, go ahead.
The Scheindlin got it right. This was not
the judge.
In terms of only profiling. It was a persecution of a race. Because what would happen here, that eventually everyone would be terrified of black men and Latino men. And then you could add anything else that by decree the mayor might come up with. He rules. He loves decrees. This is history. This has gone on for centuries, the persecution of those
right.
that you fear.
Well, Roy, and I think we mentioned yesterday about Eric Holder's, obviously his thoughts on what's happening with drug sentencing, but he makes a good point, too, that in terms of minority men, particularly in our society, even starting in school, what's a minor infraction, he said, that should end them in the principal's office puts them into the prison system. And then, we're creating this sort of culture around it.
Yeah, but along with that culture, and I'm agreeing wholeheartedly, comes the fear. You have a whole society afraid. Could you imagine where this ends up? Now we have a society afraid of our president. They don't even respect the presidency.
Yeah, well, that's his fault for going on tonight's show, as you know.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's become ludicrous. But that's the dangerous thing with Bloomberg. He loves decrees, and he tries that all the time.
Yeah.
And for the police commissioner to say, well, we have our own rules in the police department, duh, I thought the Constitution. Why do you need other rules?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. You got, where's the line between security and police state, where you got to be afraid to go outside your house if you have a certain skin color? 29 minutes after the hour, Michael Tomosky. Squee! Next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
You're a about to witness the subtle waltz known as
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it, 34 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Well, there's a reason why I want to date and kiss and marry him, because he thinks it, and I think it, and then he just, well, he's a good writer.
He completes you.
Right, and I'm too lazy to have written this, but I could have.
Yeah.
Obama is giving up some executive power, and he'll still get no credit. Michael Tomasky in the Daily Beast. Obama's NSA proposals may not have been broad and sweeping, but when was the last time any president gave up power when he didn't absolutely have to? Michael Tomasky joins us now. Good morning, Michael.
Hey there. I'm not sure how I feel on that Doobie Brothers thing, but I'll go with it.
All right, thank you.
I'll roll with it.
I appreciate it. It goes back to my rock DJ days when I had to say, they ain't related, but they Doobie Brothers. All right. That was required by the FCC. Michael,
exactly.
Some great points. I think you and I are kind of on the same place. And I was just talking to, Jim Warden and I frequently disagree on stuff, but...
No, we don't.
See what you did there. But, I think that this is exactly what the president addressed on Friday, is just what is the balance between, 100% privacy, 100% security. And, I think that you made a good point. This is the first time you remember in your lifetime a president voluntarily doing this. Because as you're saying, most polling, you say polling has been pretty consistent in showing there's a solid majority of the American people comes down on the side of what we might call controlled surveillance, right?
Yeah, all the polling I've seen. I mean, there is some polling that says, maybe things have gone a little far and it should be reined in. But the point is that there is not, Stephanie, as a huge public outcry for Obama to become a full-fledged civil libertarian on this question.
Right.
People want a balance. So he wasn't under intense political pressure to make these moves. And I understand civil libertarians saying that these moves aren't very big and aren't that dramatic and stuff. But I think, as I wrote, I think the mere fact that a president intends to, he hasn't made them yet, so we should point that out, but intends to make some moves that relinquish executive power. I can't think of any precedent. I'm not a scholar of the use of executive power, but I sure can't think of any precedent in the modern presidential era.
Well, and yesterday, of course, as you wrote, I even on the phones here, you got this predictable knee-jerk kind of like, oh, right, he would have done it even without Snowden. And as you write, those leaks began June 5th. On May 23rd, the president gave a speech, as you write, at the National Defense University, in which he foreshadowed the moves he just announced. Combine all this with John Kerry's recent announcement, we have a plan for ending drone strikes in Pakistan, you might have thought liberals would be cheering. But, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, no, I mean, that's right. I think that he was on this course before the Snowden story broke. I don't think it would have happened as quickly. I'm not under any illusions about that. This administration moves really slowly on things. When I heard the news yesterday about Holder and the sentencing disparities, I just wondered, how long this was under review and how many thousands of pages of legal briefs were written inside the Justice Department before they finally decided to pull the trigger.
Right.
So, they're not known for fast, they're not, what's the thing that's fast acting?
Whatever fast acting medicine, it's the opposite.
They're not that.
Yeah. No, he's very deliberate, and I think you're absolutely right. He admitted what you just alluded to, that the Snowden thing may have accelerated this, but, I also agree with him that Snowden is not a patriot,
I agree. I agree. Don't you get in trouble with your audience for saying things like that?
Yes. Yeah. The audience in the room with me. Are
That's
you kidding?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Did you hear that harumph over there?
I did, actually.
Did you hear the eye roll?
Interestingly, you start the piece, Michael, you say, predictably, everybody's unimpressed by the measures Barack Obama has announced to bring a little ray of transparency to America's surveillance programs. The New York Times editorialized the president's changes only tinker around the edges of our abusive surveillance programs. And you say, I wouldn't argue the proposals will fundamentally, you wouldn't argue they would fundamentally remake the surveillance state. But nevertheless, I think it's pretty remarkable that a president, any president, announced without absolutely being forced to a series of steps that relinquish some degree of executive power. Of course, he'll get no credit for that because civil libertarians tend to be absolutists and other liberals tend to be afraid or even terrified of their wrath. Why this is so tells us some important things about contemporary liberalism. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, well, I just think that, of all the various liberal interests and interest groups out there, I think, you know, a lot of other people understand that politics is a negotiation, and that, you know, it's the kind of business where you're just, it's impossible to get everything you want. And, you know, people agitated for single payer very strongly, very aggressively, and people were very upset when single payer didn't happen. I supported, you know, at least the public option myself. I mean, right. In the long run, I do support single payer, okay? But,
yeah.
But you know, these things didn't happen, and people were mad about it, but on another level, people kind of understand that this is our political system. Civil libertarians don't really, you know, appreciate that point, I think, quite as much as some other folks. And then the other point I would make is that, you know, the editors of the New York Times editorial page and the head of the ACLU and you and I aren't in that room every morning when the president gets this intelligence briefing. And it's not our job to make sure that America doesn't have any attacks. And I bet if it were our job to make sure that America isn't attacked, we'd have a different perspective about this.
Well, that's exactly how you finished the piece. And I was going to say I couldn't agree more. You say nobody, we're not responsible if our walled security is breached. Obama is responsible. And I think the mere willingness of the man in that position to have this conversation, let alone take some concrete steps, does him enormous credit. And Jim, that's why I asked you earlier not to be confrontational. This is what I really believe, Michael. It's not me just defending the president. I really believe there's got to be some balance between security and privacy. So I was just asking, what would you do? Like, if you were the president and you were looking at the intelligence he looked at, how would you fix it?
Well, one thing, I'm reading something here from The Guardian about it's kind of a lengthy thing, but the idea that they can just suck up every bit of information on us now, on the theory that someday something that they find might be relevant.
Michael, you know, we quoted that guy yesterday, Jim, the guy that said, you know, in order to find a needle in a haystack, you need the haystack. What are your thoughts on that, Michael?
You know, I think that the authority right now probably is overbroad and needs to be looked at. But one of the things Obama said was that that's what they're going to look at. I mean, that's what Section 215 of the Patriot Act is. It's under the authority of Section 215 that we have all this data mining of telephone records and so forth. Of calls, you know, of numbers calls.
Right. And you point out, Michael, that those are the point. I mean, you're really great at that. You picked out the two things that are a big deal. What you just said, the Section 215 of the Patriot Act. That's potentially a big deal. You say it would be the first narrowing of the Patriot Act since its passage, right?
No, as far as I know, and I think that's a pretty big thing.
The other thing is the FISA court, which, you know, Jim and Chris, you both said is a rubber stamp. That's the other, you know, the idea for having an adversarial presence at the FISA court is potentially even a bigger deal, right? I mean...
Well, I think so. I mean, right now, you know, if the government wants to put a warrant or put surveillance on someone or some group, all it has to do is go to that court and present its case, and there is no other side presented. And so proposing that there be another side presented, that there be an adversarial advocate, a lawyer presumably, and they're saying, no, this is overbroad, and it doesn't comport with, you know, this and that statute,
yeah,
and it's not necessary, that would change things.
I would be happy with that.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, Michael, this sentence goes to exactly, you know, when I say, what, do I trust this president more than George Bush? And I'd say yes, because of this. You say there was no mortal threat to his presidency here, yet even so he took a couple steps away from the imperial presidency. I think that's the first time since the presidency became imperial after World War II, more or less, such a thing happened. So, I mean, and I think that's exactly right. You say this is the first time in your adult life you ever heard a sitting president propose checks on his administration that he didn't have to offer.
Yeah, I don't think we would have seen George Bush do that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah.
I think it's fair to say now the Bush administration, a conservative would pipe in here and say, well, there were those FISA amendments in 2008, you know, that put some constraints on domestic surveillance. And that's true, but that happened after the Democrats took over Congress and the Democrats forced it, and there were enough votes between Democrats and libertarian-ish Republicans to get that passed. And so the Bush administration's hand was forced in that regard, but I don't think George Bush and Dick Cheney would have enunciated a policy like the one Obama did on Friday.
Well, and you know, it goes to the whole point of your piece that obviously, you know, a lot of liberals unimpressed. You said, I suppose some liberals are. I'm not. I am, but not civil libertarians. With them, it's all or nothing. If you're not signed on to the whole program, you might as well be Joe McCarthy. And you say the reason for their entrenchment is that we liberals are trained to think of these liberties as being absolute and utterly non-negotiable, but our history and our civic life shows that they are negotiated all the time. For all the when one person loses his civil liberties, we all lose them rhetoric, historically that's simply not the case. As with anything, there are degrees.
I wrote a column a couple months ago. I think you and I might have talked about it, in fact. And this is back when the gun debate was going on, when I was setting out to demonstrate to people that the rights in the Second Amendment aren't completely absolute. And I went through the various amendments of the Bill of Rights and said that there have always been limits placed on these rights. There are limits on protections of and the Fourth Amendment protections. You know, there are circumstances where search and seizure, cops can do that, and there are limits on virtually every amendment of limits on the First Amendment that have been decided by courts over the years. So I said then that means that there can be limits on the Second Amendment too. Well,
right.
if it means all that, then it also means that that civil liberties have to be negotiated. Now they have to be negotiated, very carefully. And I'm not like against civil liberties by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just not one who would say there is no negotiation possible here.
Right.
Can I just read one little sentence?
Let me ask, because you brought up, that's what I was talking about earlier in the hour, Michael, is it is interesting the parallel issues in the stop and frisk ruling, right? I mean,
yeah.
And again, I was saying this doesn't necessarily fall on partisan lines. As you and I are, we've agreed on gun issues, so I understand Bloomberg's point in trying to get more guns off the street, but, you know, again, this now brings in issues of what degree of privacy or security, right? I mean, when you're talking about the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah, exactly right. And,
I just was curious your take on the stop and frisk ruling.
I haven't read the actual ruling. I tend to think that that it did need revisiting, let's say. And like that piece in the Times op-ed page the other day by that young man, that young African American man, was very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And and he just said it's built into his life,
right.
that the stop and frisk policy has made him change his behavior, and he's perfectly law-abiding dude. I mean, that's gone too far, and
that
needs to be definitely recalibrated.
We're running short on time, but Jim, go ahead if you want to ask Michael something.
No, it's just the this article in The Guardian talked about the preemptive surveillance. The principle of preemptive surveillance threatens to subvert the most basic protections of the Fourth Amendment, which generally prohibit the government from conducting suspicionless fishing expeditions through our private affairs. If the government is correct that they can search our every communication, and in case we say or type something suspicious, there's little to prevent the NSA from converting the Internet into a tool of pervasive surveillance. And that seems,
I can't really disagree with that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make me, happy. And it is, but I, there's a point at which, unfortunately, we have to trust the people doing this surveilling that they're not going to abuse this information. And I have to say, I mean, we have had a lot of information come out from The Guardian and a bit from The Washington Post and other places about the data that is collected, but we haven't really had any scoops since June 5th, have we, about data being blatantly misused.
Right.
Have we?
No,
I don't think we have.
I don't believe so. Yeah.
I don't think we have. So
well,
maybe there's a conclusion to be drawn from that.
Yep. Michael, great ongoing discussion and another great piece. Thanks so much. Talk to you again real soon.
Always enjoy it.
All right. There he goes. You know what I derived from this whole conversation? I'm going to get no matter what because my sister has lived in all the stands, Turkmenistan. She's lived in Abuja.
Wow.
Nigeria, wherever I have to write to her.
Oh, right. Well, they're listening to her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're the salmon lady. No, it's
No, she's not the salmon lady. That's Mary.
Oh, by the way,
yes.
Thank you for the salmon burps.
Yay, now it's magically pungent in here. All right, 48 minutes after the hour. Right back on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Ooh, what a lovely program.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
She's a bad mamma jamma. Just as fine as she can be. Hey, she's a bad mamma jamma. Oh, just as fine as she can be.
Woohoo! It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 53 minutes after the hour. All right. Already this morning, I have forced you to eat my salmon.
Yeah. Hmm.
You could have resisted.
No, you kind of shoved it into my mouth.
Resistance is futile.
You said it smelled like ass, and I had to prove that it's really good.
It smells like stale ass.
I gave Jim the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part of your job is me forcing you to make bump songs out of my spin class songs, like this one. Yeah.
This is it.
Bubble butt. Isn't it awesome?
Sounds like something Spike Jones would do.
Awesome, right? See, at least I didn't drunk dial you and sing it last night. Okay. All right. There you go. Thanks.
That's by Major Lazer and Bruno Mars.
Exactly.
Someone got the credit for writing those lyrics.
Right. The last one I made you make, Jim said if Crystal Meth had a sound, that would be it.
That would be it.
That's the Can I Get a What song.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Another salmon burp, sorry.
And I did get a what. You gave it to me.
Did
Josh,
I?
Yeah. Josh in Memphis, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Josh.
How you doing, Miss Stephanie?
Good. Go ahead.
All right, me personally, I think the problem with the stop and frisk thing, or mainly with the way the police carry themselves now, is somewhere along the line we decided that police safety was more important than civilian safety. Somewhere we decided that if they were suspicious of something or they perceived you to do something suspicious, then that gave them the right to treat you any way they wanted to.
Yeah.
In the meantime, when they're the ones who are armed, trained, and paid to enter those kinds of situations, not the regular civilian who is just walking down the street.
You know, and Josh, again, I don't know if you saw that one case, but I think we can all agree that a kid shouldn't be tasered to death for tagging, you know? I mean, it's just, that's the problem is we're you know, having a lot of these cases, or you look at Trayvon Martin, and you go, he was racially profiled, and he's dead now because he had the you know, misfortune to be in doofus George Zimmerman's neighborhood. John in Arizona, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, John. Yes. Hello, John.
Hey, I just want to talk about Fox News. I'm sorry. I know you guys don't want to hear it. And the hypocrisy of this stop and frisk law. I was watching this morning, Laura Ingraham said that James Madison would roll over in his grave. And I do remember somebody named Ben Franklin, I believe is one of their local heroes, and he said, if you give up freedom for security, you deserve neither.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where that fact comes in for those guys, but as an African-American male who's been stopped at gunpoint, maybe they should try that, right? I don't smoke, I don't drink, don't use drugs. I'm a teacher right now, I have a master's degree, and I lived in Compton, and I got stopped at gunpoint by about 5, 6, 7 police officers. I've been pulled over about 50,000 times in my life. Never been arrested, nothing, wow. Nothing. And it's okay. And the thing is, the problem with they don't understand is it violates you. Okay.
No.
And I've been shot at. And that didn't make me feel as bad when the police officer pulled me over, made me get on the ground and put my hands behind my back. That is more violation than anything you can think of. And the thing is, it's psychological.
Yeah.
And they know it. And they want to have that put that fear in your mind and control you. But it's okay because they've never experienced. Ask Laura Ingraham to see if she's ever been pulled
exactly.
over. I bet she would have a heart attack.
I mean, John, exactly. I'm talking to you now and I can't emotionally or psychologically imagine what that feels like. You know, and that's a common experience for a lot of African Americans in our society, as the president talked about. 58 minutes after the hour, Charlie Pierce, much more as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. CharliePierceEsquire.com coming up at the bottom of the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Well, interesting. The stop and frisk law, you know, the mandatory minimum sentence for low-level drug offenders. A lot of there's an amazing amount of stories that are involving, you know, the race is being mentioned in.
Yeah.
Harry Reid took a lot of heat for this.
It's been obvious that they're doing everything they can to make him fail, and I hope that it's and I say this seriously. I hope that that's based on. Substance, not the fact that he's an African American.
Oh dear God! Cue right wing freak out.
Oh, they freaked out.
I can't believe it.
Michelle Malkin lost her head.
Did she? What did she have to say?
Oh, she just said he's a Harry Reid is a race baiter.
Ah.
Yeah.
Oh, not a race traitor like me.
Right.
A
mentioning
race,
Right.
You're right.
A race.
Right.
Baiter.
Baiter. Yes. And I mentioned that yesterday. So we talked about the rodeo in Missouri where the guy wore an Obama mask and. Mm-hmm. Then another clown played with the lips,
yeah.
And they asked
stop
if they
race baiting.
Yeah,
right.
Strangely, she didn't mention that part.
Right. And I think someone was mentioning yesterday. It's not like this is the first. I mentioned it just in the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
He left Phoenix, the president. They were a bunch of people were singing "Bye Bye Black Sheep."
Yep.
There were signs outside this other thing he was just at. You know, in
Blackbird. Bye Bye Blackbird.
No.
Bye Bye Black Sheep is what they were singing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and you know. Whatever, you know, Kenyan Muslims impeach the, whatever, pick any incident in recent memory. And you know, when race has been injected into it. And then I was saying, you have Rush Limbaugh yesterday blaming the president for the rodeo incident, saying he's debased the presidency by going on The Tonight Show. So what do you expect? Of course people are,
yeah, of course,
what?
Of course another rodeo clown is going to play with his lips.
Yes, exactly.
I don't think we've heard of the rodeo clown in a Nixon mask before, and yet Nixon went on Laugh-In.
Yeah. Talk it to me.
Interesting. Asking for it, yes. And then this story we mentioned yesterday, Texas Republican Representative Blake Fahrenholt,
guy.
He's an actual congressman. Said Republicans could secure the votes to impeach Barack Obama in the House of Representatives. And again, Jim, as you often ask for...
What exactly?
Don't know exactly. Although he did bring up birtherism.
Oh.
Yeah. His answer came from a constituent's question about conspiracy theories surrounding President Obama's birth certificate. He said, I think, unfortunately, the horse is already out of the barn on this, on the whole birth certificate issue.
There it is.
Yeah.
Right there.
Here
certificate
of
life.
If everybody's so unhappy with what the president's done, why don't you impeach him?
True.
And I'll give you a real frank answer about that. If we were to impeach the president tomorrow, you could probably get the votes down. But it would go to the Senate,
right.
And he wouldn't be convicted.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. So it's just, it's...
What would you convict him of, exactly?
Anyway, he started on the birth. He said the original Congress, when his eligibility came up, should have looked into it, and they didn't. I'm not sure how we fix it.
They did, actually.
Uh-huh.
He was born in Honolulu.
Right.
Which was a U.S. state at the time.
Right. So he's saying it. Clearly he agrees that the president should be impeached and probably wasn't born here. But it's just, you know, it's like the intricacies of how you do it.
Sure.
Yeah.
How do you convict someone of a crime that never happened or never existed?
Right. Yeah. He didn't mention exactly what grounds that would
happen. What high crime in this
happen on.
Would,
right.
Hmm.
Right.
Hmm.
Okay. So, by the way, we were talking about the, speaking of race issues, we're talking about them with, you know, the stop and frisk and all of that. So, Oprah... says she's sorry that a media frenzy emerged after saying she experienced racism during a trip to Switzerland. She said, I think the incident in Switzerland was just an incident in Switzerland, and I'm really sorry it got blown up. I purposely did not mention the name of the store. I'm sorry I said it was in Switzerland. I was just referencing it as an example of being in a place where people don't expect that you would be able to be there. But again, it goes to the same. They clearly didn't know who she was and assumed she couldn't afford this $38,000 bag. I was, let's see, she said... I was in a store, and the person obviously didn't know that I carry the obviously doesn't know that I carry the black card, and so they make an assessment based on the way I look and who I am. I didn't have anything that said I have money. I wasn't wearing a diamond stud. I didn't have a pocketbook. I didn't wear Louboutin shoes. I didn't have anything. You should be able to go into a store looking like whatever you look like and say, I'd like to see this. That didn't happen. She insisted there was no need for an apology. She said it's not an indictment against the country or even that store. It was just one person who didn't want to offer me the opportunity to see the bag. So no apologies necessary from the country of Switzerland. If somebody makes a mistake in the United States, do we apologize in front of the whole country? No. By the way, fun fact, she earned $77 million. last year.
She can afford a $40,000 handbag.
She can afford Switzerland, as I mentioned. Just to make a point, she ought to buy it.
But the shop girl has spoken out now and,
uh-huh.
and is wondering
oh, okay.
why Oprah is cannibalizing her with these false claims.
Cannibalizing.
Yes.
Hmm.
She said, I don't know why she is making these accusations. She is so powerful, and I'm just a shop girl. I didn't hurt anyone. I don't know why someone as great as her must cannibalize me on TV.
Was that a reference to Oprah's eating issues?
It could be. I don't
know. Okay. Because Rush Limbaugh said it was probably because she's fat.
She's fat.
Right.
That she wasn't being helped.
Right. I always enjoy his comments on people's physique. Okay.
She
looks
pretty good, actually.
She yeah?
looks lovely.
Okay, Frida.
She's on TV right now talking about the handbag incident.
Yeah. Frida in Florida, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Frida.
Hey, Stephanie.
Hello.
It's Frida.
Oh, Frida, go ahead.
No, R, not S.
Rita.
Oh, Rita, sorry.
That's it.
Travis is drunk again, I apologize. Go ahead.
That's all right. Let me ask you a question. Why does everybody have their panties in a wad about the surveillance? If you did nothing wrong, what are you worried about?
That's a slippery
about?
Slope. They can determine something is wrong after the fact.
Are you talking about the NSA or about stop and frisk?
Both.
Both. Well, because there's got to be, you don't think there should be any balance between security and privacy?
No. What
no.
I'm saying
okay.
is with the
okay.
surveillance... The NSA.
Right.
Everybody's in an uproar about it. If you did nothing wrong, what are you worried about? I don't send texts because I don't know how to. And...
Well, you're safe because you're a Luddite, but many of us... Many
oh, you
of us,
didn't know how to send texts until 2 years ago.
Until I had the sex, and then I learned really quick.
huh?
That's a true story. Bob in
I'm
L.A.
I'm an Alan Luddite.
Alan.
Hi, Bob in L.A.
Hi. When Americans are afraid, that's when all the law enforcement takes up their opportunity to make us feel better. Come on, brain. And what made us so afraid was that New York planes getting
yeah.
whacked into the buildings.
Right.
From that, we got a stop and frisk here in L.A. The LAPD are recording... your movements of your card through the city, put into a database that they can pull, they're keeping indefinitely, that they can pull up anytime they want to see where your car was. They shoot pictures of it in your driveway and the people around it.
Yeah.
Then the,
well, and
then
ironically, Bob, one of the ways they're talking about, you know, being able to adjust the stop and frisk is the cops all have cameras on them. So you go like you're giving up a little more, like,
well, that's
privacy, but, you know, at least incidents would be recorded. So, you know, in terms of, you know, the suspicion and all that.
And with our facial recognition soon, the cop's camera will be able to absolutely identify you if you're in their database, which will be taken at birth. But in order to stop America, if we're so afraid that all the terrorists have to do or all I have to do is get, you know, like five winos, give them these bottles on a vest and tell them they're wine bottles, go in the mall and drink it. You get two bombings in a nice big mall here in Southern California 1 week, one or two the next week, one or two the third week. You won't see an American on the street.
Hmm.
They're so afraid. They well, are the trickle down from the greatest generation. I don't think any backbone was passed down from the 1940s to our present generation, and I'm 69 years old. We're hmm. cowards.
We're cowards. So we deserve our police state? Hmm?
What?
Maybe. I'm
quite sure what the point
I wasn't
was.
Sure.
It's kind of rambly.
Okay. Let's go to Michael in New York. Hey, Mike. Hello, Michael.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, yes, I'm a New Yorker, and I you know, knew New York City before the stop and frisk thing went into effect. And, of course, I'm a white New Yorker, keep my hair short. I've never been stop and frisk, but I also live in low-crime neighborhoods. But I can tell you 42nd Street was a place you didn't want to walk, you know, back in the mid-'80s. And they cleaned it all up. Of course, Disney had a lot to do with that. And there was kind of also a parallel with the haystacks you were talking about before
mm-hmm.
With the NSA. I have a real issue with the NSA holding the haystack. I'd much rather see the phone company hold the haystack and the NSA, you know, on a case-by-case basis access the haystack and maybe pay the phone companies some of that budget that the NSA is getting.
Wow. Well, yeah,
The thing about this big NSA sweep is that we're sort of presumed to be criminals, and they're looking for a reason.
That's a little insulting.
Yeah, if my sister moves to one more terrorist haven, I'm definitely gone.
Yeah,
she hasn't been to Laurel Stan or Hardy Stan.
No, but every other stand, Turkmenistan. Okay, Ken in California.
Is there a Chickistan?
Hey, Ken. Hi, go ahead.
Like your show.
Thank you.
Hey, I just had a comment on this stop and frisk thing from New York. You know, I think everyone knows what probable cause is, and everyone knows what reasonable suspicion is, as far as when an officer can stop and detain you because based on their training experience, blah, blah, blah. But I think what most people are forgetting is a simple consensual encounter, and that's when an officer can walk up and just talk to a person and ask a person, can I talk to you? How are you doing? If that person chooses to talk back and engage in conversation, great. That person is late for work or whatnot and chooses to carry on, then the officer has to find reasonable suspicion or probable cause to stop them. Once we lose that, then we, in my opinion, we violate the Fourth Amendment right as to taking away someone's liberty based on what the officer perceives what may or may not happen in the future. It's a kind of like how it affects most
people. It's a little minority report. Yeah, I hear you. Mm-hmm. Without Tom Cruise.
You haven't done anything wrong yet, but you will.
Right. 17.
And by then, we'll have everything on you.
Mm-hmm.
17 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I got her number off the men's room stall. 1-800-STEPH-12.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. Charlie Pierce of Esquire.com. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, 22 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, Lisa in Houston. On the NSA. Hey, Lise.
Hey, Stephanie. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Okay. On surveillance, you can define it in many ways. Women on welfare have been under surveillance for years. People peeking in their windows to see if a man is staying there. Does she have a TV? Does she have this? Disabled people have been under surveillance for years. Are they really hurt or are they just pretending? You have Hispanics, if you don't have a paper, that's a form of surveillance. I'm watching you to see what you're doing. I'm watching to see where you're going. So all surveillance is not the federal government and the NSA. Some of it is just local government. Some of it is, you know, bill collectors. People have followed people in their cars to see if they're going to park it so they can repossess it. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of privacy when it comes to, you know, your basic needs. Stop and frisk, driving while black. You think it's hard on a black man walking to a store. Think about a black woman walking there with a purse. It's like every time you open it, you close up somebody's nose. You got to say, excuse me, can you move back? People on food stamps, everything you buy is being recorded, and they send in their bill from the merchant to the government, everything you purchase is on there.
Yep. So you wouldn't believe what I had to do to get Netflix this past weekend. I mean, really, I have given up on my last remaining civil liberty.
Why?
By the way, and Jim made the best point about the whole Oprah incident, that the only purse worth $38,000 is one with
$38,000 in it.
Right, yes. In cash, in small bills. Andy in Massachusetts, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Andy.
Hey, response to Rita there. The problem with the NSA, it's not that you may not have done anything, but with the three jump thing they do with the tracing the phone calls, you may get involved by guilt by association.
Right.
If your grandkids are into something nasty, and the NSA is just going to follow the phone calls, and suddenly she, even though she hasn't done anything, has to hire a lawyer to clear her name, have something on her record that she was investigated by the government. And just the way that they're doing it, you know, I have friends who are married. I have a friend who's married to a Middle Eastern guy. And we were joking years ago about how, oh, we're on some watch list now because our phone number showed up on her phone number and so on and so forth.
Yep.
So you don't have to necessarily do anything wrong. You can get sucked into a situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree. That's a dangerous argument to go, if you're not doing anything wrong, what do you have to worry about? I mean, that's, you know, there's a reason we have the Constitution.
Guilt by association.
Right. Well, now Anthony Weiner has finally gone and done it, Jim.
What?
He's let the cat out of the bag that Hillary might be running.
What?
Are you? Oh, now you're a bad man.
Who could have seen that coming?
Everyone. Yeah, he was talking to BuzzFeed.
Yep. Do you know what her role in Hillary's 2016 campaign is going to be?
I do.
What will it be?
I'm not telling you.
Do you feel like you've damaged her place in that world?
Oh. I feel that what I've done has hurt her, yeah. It's hurt her professionally. It's hurt her personally.
Yes.
And I'm going to do it again.
Yes.
Who wants to see my junk?
And furthermore, who wants to see my junk? Dan in Michigan, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
I do a lot of online surfing in the morning. I keep up with marijuana news.
Oh.
And a lot of hot topics have been lately about the DEA using the NSA for information.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting this information and retrieving it with the calls that they're chasing after, and then they set up these stops. They don't instill where they retrieve the information from the NSA, but use it towards their case. And I think that that is just totally wrong.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why I think, you know, the stuff that we should post Michael Tomasky's piece.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that the two things the president are proposing are a big deal. I mean, in terms of narrowing the Patriot Act and the making the FISA not a rubber stamp, I think those are significant. I also think it's significant what Eric Holder talked about yesterday. This is, and again, I think a big deal. He announced that low-level nonviolent drug offenders with no ties to gangs or large-scale drug organizations will no longer be charged with offenses that impose severe mandatory sentences. He also introduced policy to reduce sentences for elderly nonviolent inmates and alternatives to prison for nonviolent criminals. The Attorney General yesterday.
This is why I have today mandated a modification of the Justice Department's charging policy so that certain low-level, nonviolent drug offenders who have no ties to large-scale organizations, gangs, or cartels will no longer be charged with offenses that impose draconian mandatory minimum sentences.
And he went on to, you know, he made some really good points. We must face the reality that as it stands, our system in too many ways is broken. One of my best friends is a psychologist in a, mm-hmm. In the prison system, and she can tell you about this. And with an outsized, unnecessarily large prison population, we need to ensure that incarceration is used to punish, to deter, and to rehabilitate, not to merely warehouse and to forget.
Yep.
This brings into, Jim always brings up privatizing of prisons. I mean, this has become a for-profit industry.
Yeah. So they have a financial incentive to arrest people.
Right, and he said a vicious cycle of poverty, criminality, and incarceration traps too many Americans and weakens too many communities. Many aspects of our criminal justice system may actually exacerbate these problems rather than alleviate them, the Attorney General.
This is our opportunity to define this time, our time, as one of progress and innovation. This is our promise to forge a more just society.
And I was saying, I think this is important. He also said the Justice Department will work with the Department of Education and other allies to confront the school-to-prison pipeline and those zero-tolerance school discipline policies that do not promote safety but instead serve as gateways to the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. He said a minor school disciplinary offense should put a student in the principal's office and not in a police precinct because then it just perpetuates the cycle.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, one more.
We also must confront the reality that once they're in that system, people of color often face harsher punishments than their peers. One deeply troubling report, released in February of this year, indicates that in recent years, black male offenders have received sentences nearly 20% longer than those imposed on white males convicted of similar crimes. This isn't just unacceptable, it is shameful.
All right, Charlie Pierce on that and much more as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Miller. We are dealing with someone here who has absolutely no life.
Yep, it is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Lloyd in Tampa, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Lloyd.
Hey, good morning, Stephanie Miller.
Good morning.
Luke.
Let me give you another black man's perspective about stop and frisk.
Okay.
When I grew up, we lived in almost every state. My father was in the Air Force. If you gather 1,000 young black men right now from all over the country, put them in a room and ask them and tell them, what is the talk? Ask them if they know what the talk is. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them will raise their hand. We know the talk before we're 15 years old about how you deal with the police.
Mm-hmm.
They're not our friends. They're an occupying force. So when New York was brazen enough to actually put this into law, when me and my friends talked about this, we weren't shocked at all.
Right.
Because it's just another attempt to put that police state that they always talk about.
Yeah. They, you know, I saw that somebody did a cartoon, you know, I think it was right after the Zimmerman verdict about, you know, the talk, and there's a white dad and a white, you know, little boy, and you're absolutely right. The talk is, of course, about the birds and the bees, you know, to white people, and, you know, and like you say, that's right. It's totally different reality for black people in our country.
So when you hear about black guys, when they call your show, it's now becoming more and more of a public thing. My brothers on the way down to me and to my little brother being stopped, thrown on the ground, have your clothes jostled. You could be, we were the Cosby kids before they were the Cosby kids. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm like the little Boy Scout helping the little old white lady across the street with her groceries and get thrown on the ground and get searched.
Yeah.
Because I'm a threat.
Right, because clearly you were trying to steal the groceries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was, with my Boy Scout uniform and everything. So it really doesn't matter. You know, what you're doing, I could be, here's one more example before I hang up. When I was like 27, I got this job. I have to travel all around the country. Now, I could be in a $10,000 suit driving my Mercedes, or I could be riding down the street on a bicycle wearing jeans. The same cop who saw me driving the Mercedes that pulled me over will be the same cop that threw me on the ground.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and this is, I'm glad that we just played Eric Holder talking mm-hmm. about the realities of people of color often face harsher punishment. We know this, and people try to deny it. Sentencing is harsher on minorities. Eric Holder.
With an outsized, unnecessarily large prison population, we need to ensure that incarceration is used to punish, to deter, and to rehabilitate, but not merely to warehouse and to forget.
Michael in Missouri on the drug laws. Hey, Michael.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
And Fab Crew. Hey, it's not just the draconian drug sentencing measures that have implications in the war on drugs. Personal reference, my son was in college at Northern Arizona University. We're white, of course. He got a felony conviction for possession in Arizona. This thing, you know, affected his life for years after he got married and had children. He couldn't get jobs. Like his credit, it was hard. His credit suffered because he couldn't get the jobs that he was qualified for. This whole war on drugs in the prison industrial complex is a joke. It's tied into the whole Koch brothers thing to establish a feudal state. The police mm-hmm. state, our brothers, you know, our black brothers and sisters. It's a class war, man.
Yeah. Well, by the way, did you see Frothy the Santorum? His thoughts that we don't have classes. Apparently, this is new information, Jim. Mm. There is no income inequality because we have no classes at all.
Right.
Who does Barack Obama talk about all the time? The middle class.
Mm-hmm.
Since when in America do we have classes? Since when in America are people stuck in areas or defined places called class?
Stuck.
That's Marxism talk. When Republicans get up and talk about middle class, we're buying into their rhetoric of dividing America. Stop it.
Wow. Stop it. He's from the Ann Romney School. Just stop it.
Stop it. Stop it.
Right. Stop it. Right. There are no classes.
The middle class was a good thing.
Yes.
We created that after World War II.
And then
the Republicans have been trying to destroy it ever since.
And Marxism talk.
And you're not stuck in the middle class for the rest of your life. If you work hard, you can move up.
Mm-hmm.
Or down.
I think the president's
if you don't move hard.
Point is a thriving middle class, as
right.
Jim implies. It's good for everybody. You know, it's hard to decide who is Massa most crazy of the Republican. So he's obviously.
¿Quién es más?
¿Quién es más?
Loco. Más crazy. Loco.
Right. he was on Meet the Press implying he will run. Frothy. There will be yet a second Santorum surge.
But he keeps losing.
Yeah.
Right.
What makes him think that?
But because he's in the wrong class, right. Clearly.
I see.
He's in the losing class.
Right. Rand Paul, Chris Matthews says he for sure is going to be their nominee.
Right.
And then, of course, there's a well-known cuckoo bird, Ted Cruz, according to John McCain. Is that what he called him?
Cuckoo
I think.
Bird.
What did he call him?
I can't remember.
Something like that. Close enough. Guess what? As John Fugelsang says, the douche does not fall far from the bag. Ted Cruz's father links gay marriage to socialism.
Mm.
What the what now? Yes.
Huh?
Right. Mm-hmm. Ted Cruz's father, Rafael.
Rafael Cruz.
Right. Sounds foreign.
Sounds Canadian.
It's Canadian.
Spoke to the Family Leaders Summit in Ames, Iowa over the weekend, comparing President Obama to Fidel Castro.
Right. Sure.
And warning that the U.S. was chugging towards socialism via
chugging?
Gay marriage.
What?
Like a big gay train.
Huh?
Big gay
marriage
train, big
has
gay,
nothing to do with the socialist economic system.
Well, he explained. Socialism requires that government becomes your god. That's why they have to destroy the concept of God.
No.
They have to destroy all loyalties except loyalty to government. That's what's behind homosexual marriage.
What? What's a big bouillabaisse of, huh?
Nah. Really? He made repeated allusions to the failure of Castro's hope and change and connected Castro to Jimmy Carter's socialist policies.
What?
Oh, I see. There's just one through line from Castro to Carter to
Obama. To gay marriage.
And it all came in on it.
Right.
The gay marriage train leaves Cuba.
At 45 miles an hour.
Right. What time?
Then
what
how
time does it arrive in Miami?
Fast.
When will Ted Cruz's father
European
go?
European swallow.
To the loony bin. Okay.
What?
What now? All right. Oh, we found him. Okay. Oh. It's time for our Tuesday pal. There's only one man now that understands. And that's the author of Idiot America.
Pierce.
Charlie Pierce, political columnist for Esquire.com.
Why is everybody always laughing with me?
Hello, Charlie Pierce.
I'm sorry I'm lost up here in the 315.
315. Where's the 315?
That's Stephanie Miller country, my friend.
Oh.
Upstate New York, near Lakeport, my hometown.
I'm in Geneva right now.
Geneva. All right, very nice. Near Tanawana, Cheektowaga, and Schenectady.
And Canandaigua.
Right. Exactly. Now, Charlie
all
Pierce.
All Indian words meaning there will be a casino here one day. Yes.
And also, as I've said, all of those names are Indian for I need to get the out of here. I'm freezing my off. All right. Now,
going to visit my cousin, the Seminole, down in Florida.
Yes, exactly.
For six weeks every February.
You are, of course, from Boston, home of Whitey Bulger, which I had to learn the hard way is not a white supremacist direction. It is a mobster who is just convicted, right? 11 murders in a sweeping racketeering case. He was just found guilty of 31 of the 32 counts he faced. And you say this was the feds managed to complete the easiest slam dunk in the history of jurisprudence.
Well, yeah, because his lawyer essentially copped most of the indictment in his opening argument.
Right.
Basically, the lawyer was making the argument that Whitey wasn't a rat, wasn't protected by the FBI, which was false, and that he didn't kill women, which was extremely false. So basically, his whole defense was trying to vindicate his reputation.
Yeah.
Your Honor, my client is a crook.
Yeah,
well, but
not the kind of crook you think he is.
You hinted something, well, not hinted. You said a corrupt FBI office at best shielded Bulger and at worst continually frustrated some dedicated and courageous state cops who were trying to run this thug to the ground for 30 years.
Well, yeah, the reason he went on the lam was because an FBI agent named John Connolly tipped him that he was about to be indicted in a state court. So he took off. That's why we lost him for as long as we did.
Yeah.
He
was right here under my nose in Santa Monica. Sorry I missed that for him.
Yeah, how about that?
Sorry.
You probably saw him walking his little poodle and stuff.
Yeah, well, anyway, but the other big thing we've been talking about all morning, obviously some big news out of the Attorney General's office. You talk about Eric Holder announcing he will seek to lift the dead weight of mandatory minimum sentences for several categories of nonviolent drug offenses. And then we've been talking about stop and frisk all morning, the judge ruling that a blatant violation of the Fourth Amendment. But you were, as you do, put it in better historical context. You say in both cases we've heard analysts talk about these kinds of policies as having unintended consequences, most of them racially discriminatory, and you find this insultingly ahistorical. Tell us why.
Well, because I think if we're really going to be, if we go back, and you'll notice that most of the historical data that we get says since 1980. Well, something very significant happened in 1980. Mm-hmm. We elected a president who ran on an implicitly and occasionally explicitly racial platform.
Well, there
and
I go again.
I have to want, and there you go again.
Yep, welfare queens.
Know, I think if we're going to be honest, and I wrote this in on the blog yesterday, I think if we're going to be honest, we should examine exactly how many of these consequences were unintentional.
Right, well, because you say then in the middle of it all, the war on drugs got itself declared, and the face of the war on drugs was a black or brown face and scared legislatures into passing appallingly draconian laws in response. And then you say a lot of black and brown people in inordinate number, given the population as a whole, got tossed into prisons now so overcrowded, most of them are time bombs. So, yeah, but anyway, as you say, it's good we're looking at these things, but the consequences were actually not unintentional.
No, some of them weren't, and some of them were quite deliberate, and some of them were of a piece with the general rolling back of the accomplishments of the civil rights movement, which goes on today, as we discover in places like North Carolina. Or as it's described in the blog, the newly insane state of North Carolina.
Yes.
Speaking of insane, I always have to read your column to see if what I saw on Sunday was as insane as
what
it was.
Oh, what a weekend it was for the bookers. The bookers of those shows. Oh, my God. ABC.
Yes.
They're all on mushrooms.
Yes.
Donald Trump and Louis Gohmert?
Right. Right.
Wow.
Right. You said on the Lord's Day should be cause for simultaneously action to be taken by the FCC and the Vatican. It was a parade of stupid.
It was a mortal sin of stupid.
But anyway, you said
you need a plenary indulgence of smart to get over that.
You say Gohmert came on to explain why the Constitution mandates that a law passed by Congress, signed by the president, upheld by the Supreme Court, isn't really a law if Louis Gohmert doesn't think it is, which was fascinating.
Yeah, I honestly don't understand how the bookers figured this out. That Louis Gohmert is, I think, by a bipartisan consensus, the biggest nut in the House of Representatives, which is saying something these days.
Right.
And to trot him out on national television as an authority on anything.
Well,
or as
then,
a leader of any kind is preposterous.
And the only thing that could trump that, and literally, would be, of course, to book Donald Trump to open a kind of birther whoop-ass on Ted Cruz.
That'd be huge.
Right?
Huge.
Well, yeah, I'm mostly angry at ABC for forcing me to defend Ted Cruz. But, I mean, this is crazy. I mean, bringing this guy back, why are you bringing this guy back if it's not just to have a freak show? You're not bringing him back to inform anybody. He's got nothing interesting or insightful to say. You're bringing him back essentially to put on a show for you.
Right. And what the good thing is, you said it made Meet the Press seem more marginally sane, even with Congressman Steve King and his rapidly spinning eyeballs in attendance. And I gotta say, I enjoyed the smackdown that Anna Navarro put on Steve King.
I like what Anna Navarro said. I think she misunderstands her own party rather dramatically, but I like what she says to Steve King. I mean,
yeah. As you say, Steve King came on to talk about immigration and valedictorians and drug runners and cantaloupe-sized calves, but I love this part. What is you quoted, she said, well, first of all, I think Congressman King should go get himself some therapy for his melon fixation. I think there might be medication for that. I think he's a mediocre congressman who's got no legislative record, and the only time he makes national press is when he comes out and says something offensive about undocumented immigrants or Hispanics. And I loved it. And he's still there. David Carrier's like, any response? It was hilarious. Right. So he says, well, I'd say this. First of all, I spoke only of drug smugglers, and if Anna understands the language, she should know that. I didn't insult her. I didn't insult other Republicans. And I'm not undocumented, Congressman. I vote. It was priceless.
Yeah. He's got watermelon thighs.
Again, I mean, it's Louis Gohmert and Steve King that scares the pants off of all the Republicans that Aaron Navarro thinks make sense on this issue.
Yeah. Well,
why isn't anything moving on immigration? It's not because Eric Cantor and Paul Ryan and those people don't want to do it. It's because they're scared to death of the people who follow Louis Gohmert and Steve King.
And then this is saying something, my favorite new Charlie Pierce line thus far. If Anna understands the language, if you put Steve King and Louis Gohmert in a barrel and rolled it downhill, there'd always be an ignorant dipwad on top.
You have a way with words, Charlie Pierce.
Ah, thank you, Chris LaVoie.
Love you, Charlie Pierce. See you next week, honey.
See you next week.
All right. 48 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
For a good time, call now. 1-800-STEP-1-2.
Stephanie Miller.
You really got me.
is the Stephanie Miller Show. 53 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Thank you. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Denise in Chicago. Hey, Denise.
Hey, Stephanie. I've talked with you before.
Uh-huh.
Just love you.
Thank
Have you found a spot you're going to go to yet? A new TV land?
Oh, yes. We can't tell you yet or we'd have to kill you. But we will announce
it
as soon as we can.
Well, I almost felt like killing somebody. My blood pressure went through the roof when I heard just before you went on break about there's a class warfare and we're talking about Marxism. Well, let me give you an example of what's happening in the job world when you're seeking employment today. I have an MBA. I have over 20 years experience, just got my MBA from a very credited, recognized school. And I was told by the recruiter that the company, and I won't get into the industry, but that the company doesn't recognize my MBA because it isn't from Harvard.
Oh, I see.
And I also paid for my MBA on my own with a school loan, which I bought into the capitalistic approach to education here, in which that is my only debt. So,
wow.
I'm unemployed. I have my only debt for my school loan, and I'm being told that my MBA isn't good enough because Fortune 500s hire people with Harvard degrees. So.
Yeah, and Rick Santorum says there's no class system. There's
no
class system at all in America. Stop it. That's Marxism talk. Terry in Atlanta, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Stephanie. I just wanted to throw out a quick statistic. For all of those screaming of the fairness of stop and frisk and all that, please realize that according to the Innocence Project, of the 311 innocent citizens convicted of rape, then exonerated by DNA evidence, 193 of those 311 are black.
Mm-hmm.
So think about that. That's 12% of the population falsely inflated to make up two-thirds of a prison population.
Yeah.
And that's just the ones that could be proven. And then they use those same prison statistics, population statistics, to justify the stop and frisk in inner cities. At the end of the day, please really realize that we all eat, sleep, art, and commit crime at the same rate. So forgive us for being less than trusting of, you know, the stop and frisk fairness and, you know, this, you know, stuff that they're trying to blow at us, because we are, for whatever reason, I don't care what it is, it doesn't matter, but when we hit the prison system and when we hit the justice system, we don't get quite that fair shake that we all love to just, you know, embrace and believe that it's a equal scale. We don't get it. And let's look at it. I know it's uncomfortable, but let's look at it and see why. Then we can address the issues as far as, you know, hey, why is 193 of those 311 that we know didn't do it in prison? You know, that's ridiculous. And if it was anyone else or any other culture, they wouldn't be cool with that. They would be up in arms. And when we cry wolf, it's not always just, you know, a wolf cry. A lot of times there's something to it. So before you make a rash, you know, defensive motion, hey, no, they're just playing the race card, please stop each incident and look into it, see if it has any merit, and then make your decision.
Yep.
But don't prejudge, you know, a situation just because it's uncomfortable to you.
Yep. Well, that's what the judge said. All right. Just when you think you can't top something Rick Santorum said, another Republican said global warming is a total fraud and a plot to institute global government.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll tell you who as we continue. 58 minutes after the hour, it's the Stephanie Miller Show. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. I was just talking to Nurse Jackie in the Current News Center about the healthcare corner. We had a quote-unquote surgeon call in yesterday who could not impart any more talking points to us because he had to rush directly into surgery.
Yes.
Mary, with some fun facts. Staff, as I was reading this to Jackie, regarding the claim by the quote-unquote surgeon, pretty much everyone put him in air quotes.
Actually, I'm a sturgeon. I'm a fish. I misspoke.
Regarding the claim the surge that has the Affordable Care Act has caused insurance rates to go up, about 6 months ago I went to the California calculator to see what my adult son's rate would be, and it said $500 a month, which is how much his Cobra cost a few years ago before they kicked him off and that left him uninsured. Today I went to check it, it's down to $279 a month. CoveredCalifornia.com, CoveredCA.com, by the way, if you're out here. Yay, Obamacare.
Yay!
Thanks to you, Jackie and the Mooks, for spreading the truth. Mary, you're welcome, Mary.
Wow. Even Michelle Bachman's happy about it.
Yay! Yay! I wonder if that guy worked at Boucher Hospital.
Where good doctors have bold ideas. Voucher Hospital.
Brought to you by Filner's Spittoons with state-of-the-art saliva collection technology.
Doctor, we have an emergency. A patient with an acute subdural hematoma.
That's right, doctor. He has increased intracranial pressure, hemorrhaging of the temporoparietal locus, and must undergo endoscopic surgery immediately.
Yes, I concur. Prep for surgery at once.
Wait, doctor. There's a discussion about Obamacare on AM radio.
I must take this. Everyone stand by.
But, doctor, what about the patient?
You don't understand. I'm a surgeon who listens to both sides and stumbled upon this argument on my way to surgery. I must respond. Nurse, give me that phone.
Nurse, give him that phone stat.
Tune in to Voucher Hospital next time to see if Obamacare covers Obama derangement syndrome.
I've forgotten all about Voucher Hospital.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not sure. Hopefully this will be covered under Affordable Care, the testicle eating fish.
What?
If you're planning on vacationing.
Sweden, yeah.
Right.
Don't.
Well, yes. Isn't the water always too cold in Sweden to go swimming anyway? I'm staying out of the water there.
Scandinavian swimmers warned about testicle attacking monster fish. Oh, dear. Gawker brings us the story. A testicle-crushing vegetarian monster fish. I guess it makes an exception for testicles.
Not much of a vegetarian now,
yes,
is it?
Except for balls.
All right.
From South America has invaded the waters off Scandinavia. Last week, fishermen there between Sweden and the sound between Sweden and Denmark reeled in a paku. Right, a fish best known for its sharp teeth and occasional attacks on a male.
On your package.
Male.
Why can't they just bite
it's
ankles?
A package fish. Hmm?
Why can't they bite ankles? Why do they have to go for that?
I do not know. Experts at the Natural Museum of Denmark announced the catch this week. The paku is not normally dangerous to people, but it has a quite serious bite. There have been incidents in other countries, such as Papua New Guinea, where some men have had their testicles bitten off. They bite because they're hungry and testicles sit nicely in their mouth.
Oh, my God.
All right, fill in your own joke there.
Like a sack of plums.
Carl went on explaining that testicles aren't part of the paku's usual diet, which is primarily vegetarian. Its mouth is not so big, so, of course, it normally eats nuts, fruit, the other kind, and small fish. But human testicles are just a natural target.
Nuts and fruit don't grow in the ocean.
Don't ask me. According to, I guess, the underwater type. I'm not really sure.
The underwater nuts? Okay. Oh, yeah, they're yummy. Planters makes a great dry roasted underwater nut. What?
According to Carl,
how can
it
be dry roasted underwater?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is nearly indistinguishable from the piranha, except in one way. Its teeth are flatter and stronger than the piranha's, perfect for crushing.
Ow. So it's a mouthful of molars instead of... Hmm.
The fish, which is usually found in the Amazon River, was likely dumped into Scandinavian waters by an amateur fish collector. Good job.
Right.
Nicely done. Thanks, Obama. What can male swimmers in Scandinavia do to protect themselves, you're asking? Keep your swimsuit on in the sound these days. Maybe because there are a few more out there, said the expert.
Maybe a metal cup.
It's not normal to get your testicles bitten off, but of course it can happen, especially now in Sweden.
Nice. We'll go swimming in Sweden.
Yikes. That'll be my takeaway.
Maybe that's what those meatballs are made of.
Yes.
At IKEA.
Swedish meatballs.
What was
there you go.
What was the name of that fish again?
Maybe they're Scandinavian
paku?
Swimmers.
A paku?
Mm-hmm.
Or can we expect paku NATO?
All right. Jeff in Salem, we've been talking a lot about Louis Gohmert this morning. We just talked to Charlie Pierce. Hi, Steph. I've been noticing Louis Gohmert is showing up more and more in the public eye to offer his verbal bowel movements. I'm wondering if someone might want to start a new segment called Gohmert's Pile. Long enough to remember Gohmert Pile. Gohmert's Pile of...
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Pile of verbal poo. All right. Let's see. Oh, here's a tweet. A dubious honor for Anthony Weiner, viewed unfavorably by 80% statewide.
Yeah.
He's the most unpopular politician in the history of the Siena poll.
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty bad.
And the second tweet, Anthony Weiner releases his first TV ad saying powerful voices don't want him to be mayor. Pretty much most
80%
of the people
of New York
right.
City, yes.
Those, that's a powerful voice, all right. That's the way it works. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also, he only pulled down like $23,000 in the last month.
Oh,
yeah, as opposed to the hundreds of thousands of dollars he was getting.
Yeah, that's not good.
No. Right.
Jill in Ithaca, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Jill.
Hi. I'd like to introduce some of those fish to Congress. But anyway, yes, and Jim is my Michael Tomasi, because whatever, you know, I agree so much with Jim.
Oh, thank you.
Anyway, yeah, the statistics for the stop and frisk in New York City,
mm-hmm.
44% of the people who stopped were black, 33% Latino, and roughly 9% white. And it was the white population were the ones that were more guilty
right.
than either, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. The higher percentage of time that, you know, the illegal weapon or whatever is actually found, right?
Exactly. And even though you might not think Edward Snowden is a patriot, he did start a good conversation in this country.
Right.
And
right,
but I don't know.
Read Michael Tomasky. Read my Michael Tomasky, and then you can talk about Jim Ward. But, but as he pointed out, I mean, you know, this is what I said yesterday, Jim. I said, do you think the president's lying when he said he had already started this review before the Snowden stuff? And Tomasky proved that. He gave a speech, you know, weeks before that where he talked. He foreshadowed exactly what he's doing now.
Okay, that's great, but we still have to keep on top of it. And also, you guys might not know about these.
And Jill, my point is, let me just finish. My point is that
sure.
As the president said, we could have done that without, you know, releasing intelligence to God knows who, terrorists, Chinese, Russians. You know what I mean? We could have, as the president said, we would have arrived at the same place. So that's to me why.
I don't know. I'm
not sure about that.
I'm not sure. Yay, Jim. Anyway,
whatever you two, get a room.
He's married.
Jim might as well be licking his cheek or her cheek.
I'm not sure if that's as significant to him as it is to you. But anyway, what else?
My cheek on my face.
Yeah,
but,
saliva anyway, running down your cheek.
He would Filner headlock you right now.
But anyway, yes. And there's these letters from national security letters that go out to people. Like, there's one that's a sponsor. There's one called JavaJet. The guy refused to give information. All those people that are keeping our private information, the government's after them. It's like, you know, the people that back up certain computer things, the government wants their information.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't, once they get these letters, they're not allowed to say anything. It's, you know, it takes a lot of effort to even get an attorney because they're not allowed to even talk to anyone about it. It's very, very sick.
Yep, I hear you. Scott in Illinois excuse me. Scott,
good morning, ma'am.
Oh, sorry, did I get in between you and your girlfriend? Scott in Illinois, hello.
Hello. I just wanted to call and get, an explanation from your side of the fence as to if the new health care law is the right thing to do,
mm-hmm.
how do you explain why it is that the president has delayed the implementation of part of it, and also mm-hmm. that one of the authors of the legislation
mm-hmm.
Was quoted as saying it's a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just help me understand?
Okay, yes, of course. He was not saying the entire law is a disaster, and he was talking about first of all, let's start with the first thing about delaying the mandate. That's tweaking. As the president said, we've had to tweak Social Security, Medicare, all kinds of big programs when you're trying to implement something that big. Why is that? Why is that admitting it's a disaster?
Yeah. Well, I'm of the opinion that they are having to tweak it just like they've done with Social Security
right.
and everything
every
else,
other major program we've ever implemented. Right.
Because they're all a disaster.
Social Security is a disaster.
And Medicare.
My take on my here to get you an example of where I'm coming from. Like for Social Security, Mm-hmm. If there was a way to do this, I would say at 35 years old, take everything I put in Social Security and give it to the people that have been in it for a long time. What, as long as I knew that my son, who's 2 years old, would never have to be involved with Social Security, then that would be fine with me. I want for people to be independent from government, not dependent on government.
You want right. Well, your son will thank you for that someday.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah, so and if your son doesn't save any money, then
he's going to live in the street.
Yeah.
Great. Didn't we spray troll be gone after the surgeon called yesterday? Oh, well. Okay.
No food safety rules.
That libertarian paradise that is Somalia.
Thanks, Dad. Okay.
You should move to Somalia.
Sure. If you don't want any government regulation or government help of any kind.
Well, I think you should volunteer to have Rand Paul do eye surgery on you with a rusty spoon.
Absolutely.
And he should swim.
And let the market decide.
And he should swim to Somalia and not waste tax dollars on transportation.
Right through Scandinavian waters, if it's possible. 17 minutes after the hour, right back on The Stephanie Miller Show.
It's fun, it's healthy, it's good exercise. The kids just love it.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 22 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Michael in New York. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Steph.
Hello.
I'm so thrilled to be talking to you.
Thank you.
I'm tongue-tied, but I'll go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You know that those balls-eating fish that they were talking
yes.
about a little earlier?
Yes.
And how that caller earlier wanted to send some of them up to Congress?
Uh-huh.
Those poor little fish would be starving to death.
I see what you did there. Congress, blah, 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 blah. All right. Oh, wow. Speaking of Congress critters, how's about this one? GOP rep, global warming is a total fraud, a plot to institute global government. Speaking to a group of supporters that supported, there's the most startling part of the story. Representative
supporters.
Dana Rohrabacher, Republican of California.
Mm-hmm.
He's our local critter. Just completely dismissed global warming, rebuking belief in its negative effects as part of a greater plot by liberals to institute global government.
All right.
Someone's up for re-election.
He responded to California Democratic Senator Barbara Boxer's comments about the recent slew of wildfires being partially the result of global warming, which is probably true.
Yeah.
He said he was talking to the Newport Tea Party, please and thank you. Just so you know, global warming is a total fraud. He said, you've got liberals who get elected at the local level, want state government to do the work and let them make the decisions. Then at the state level, they want the federal government to do it. And at the federal government, they want to create global government to control all our lives.
And then it's galactic government, the Death Star.
Right, that could be next. The Death Star is obviously next. And that's what the game plan is.
What?
But it's step by step. Slowly I turned. More and bigger control over our lives by higher levels of government.
You're part of a rebel alliance and a traitor. Take it away.
And global warming is that strategy in spades. Our freedom to make our choices on transportation and everything else? No, that's got to be done by a government official who, by the way, probably comes from Nigeria.
What?
Because
what?
He's a UN government official, not a U.S. government official.
Wow.
What
weird little fantasy world is he living in?
Dana Rohrabacher has been...
Nigeria, which, in case you haven't noticed,
is black. Yeah. He's been fair on a lot of issues. I don't know why he's going way off the deep end here.
Because I don't know whether you just need to get more crazy to fit in any
guess
sort of
so.
Paradigm of the Republican Party today.
Good God.
Okay.
Yep, not crazy enough. Need more crazy. No, not quite. Not quite crazy enough. Okay, now you're getting there.
I love this
headline. Nigeria. Good.
Paul Krugman writes, Rand Paul actually has no idea that the deficit is falling. He writes, I think it's pretty clear that Paul actually has no idea that the deficit is falling. It's quite possible that, that neither does Cantor. The whole incident reminds me of 2011 when supposedly well-informed candidates like Tim Pawlenty went on on about soaring government employment during a time of unprecedented cuts in the public payroll. Once you're inside the closed conservative information loop, you know a lot of things that aren't so. What I'm curious about, however, is what the public knows. There was a 1996 poll in which voters were asked whether the deficit increased or decreased under Clinton. It had, in fact, fallen sharply. A plurality of voters, a heavy majority of Republicans, thought the deficit had gone up. So that would be, he's right, it would be interesting to do a poll to say, no, the deficit is actually, which takes away their only talking point, doesn't it, in terms of all these threats of government shutdown, spending's out of control, the deficit, blah, blah, blah.
Whatever.
Which, by the way, maybe it's some sense is seeping into the Paul Ryan spending cuts fake backlash from moderate Republicans. Isn't that wonderful,
have any
Eddie?
Of those?
Isn't that wonderful, Eddie? You'll have to go redo that fancy budget of yours.
Isn't that wonderful, Eddie? I won't go! I won't!
Back to the drawing board.
You can't leave me!
Midway between the 2012 and 2014 election campaigns, moderate Republican conservatives are beginning to foment a revolt of their own, a backlash to the anti-spending Tea Party shrillness as budget cuts begin to significantly shrink.
Both of the moderate Republicans.
Right.
Yes.
Defense and domestic programs. Pragmatists in the party have served notice they won't stand idly by for indiscriminate spending cuts to politically popular community development grants, education programs, and even Amtrak. Ryan's budget is little more than a non-binding wish list, cutting Medicaid, Medicare, and food stamps. Voucher Hospital. It's an imaginary place that he dreams of.
We should play the original Voucher Hospital.
It's premium support. It's not a voucher. It's premium support. It's a serious plan.
And slashing budgets.
Look at my abs.
Okay. Let me turn my baseball hat around. Many tenured Republicans, particularly members of the House Appropriations Committee, have viewed Ryan's sweeping cuts as unworkable all along. But, I said, they need to finish their little fight over there before we can. Oh, do we have the original?
Yeah.
Oh.
Where good doctors have bold ideas. Voucher Hospital.
Voucher Hospital. Brought to you by Ace Hardware Stuff.
Nurses to the nurses station.
Dr. Ryan.
Hello, Mary. Well, I've got good news and bad news.
Yes?
First, the bad news. You need a bypass operation, and it costs $167,000.
And the good news?
The good news?
Yes.
I have a voucher here.
This is for $2 off an extra value meal at Wendy's.
Oh, wrong voucher. Here you go.
Okay, this is for $2 off a $167,000 bypass operation.
You're welcome.
Will Mary get her bypass operation? Will Dr. Ryan be able to use a voucher for 18 holes at Pebble Beach? Tune in tomorrow to Voucher Hospital.
Hooray.
It's premium support, not a voucher. Okay. Want to watch me do some curls?
Wow, here's the headline in Salon. GOP likely won't shut the government down, but if it does, it won't be over Obamacare, but extending sequestration.
Really?
Yes. Salon says there isn't enough support among Republicans in Congress for shutting down the government over Obamacare, and I think there are probably enough Republicans on the Hill who want to put brinksmanship behind them that they'll vote to keep the government open, if only by extending current funding levels without extracting any real concessions. But there is a way that pent-up Republican rage could explode into a real shutdown fight next month. So these are the ones that they agreed were as disastrous. Both sides agreed.
Right.
So, yes. Salon writing, Republicans want to claim victory in the fight over the sequestration and make its dangerously low levels of federal spending permanent. See, because it'll be bad for America, as they admitted before. But it'll be a win for them. So that's how that might happen.
Wow.
Isn't that fun? All right, celebrity stack and much more as we continue 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
You've been drinking too much or too little. I forget how it works with you.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Well, I don't know if this is covered by the Affordable Care Act. A woman intent on getting breast implants is begging for money on the street with a sign that reads, "Not homeless, need boobs." Where, Jim? In Florida.
Of course.
She said, "I just want bigger boobs because I'm not happy with the ones I have. I figured this was a good way to do it. People put out signs that they're homeless. I'm not, so I'm just being honest."
That's like an old-timey kind of crowdsourcing without the computer.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought maybe she'd be swimming among breast-eating fish.
No.
No?
It appears to be working out. She not only has more money, she's gotten plenty of smiles as well, she says. She's lucky, exactly. They're not Scandinavian boob-eating fishes.
Yes.
That they only prefer testicles.
Boob-eating Swedish fish.
Wow, Swedish fish fight back. I did not need to see Justin Bieber naked in front of his guitar. Did you?
And his grandma.
And his this is weird.
I thought it was Rachel Maddow.
Oh.
Jim Louise. Justin Bieber naked. It's my in a guitar is the headline. Can I just say I would never, ever, ever want to be naked in front of my grandmother under any circumstances.
Actually, there's a picture of me that exists when I was much, much thinner of me wearing nothing a bass guitar.
Oh.
Yes.
I bet you that's
as
odd.
A part of the Foreskins?
Your garage band?
Which is not really a band at all. It's just a concept.
It certainly is.
Yes.
Yes, he covered his junk with a guitar and jammed out a naked serenade for one lucky lady fan, his grandmother.
Wow.
Yes, the TMZ obtained the photos of a completely nude Biebs strumming away on his big wooden instrument.
Why are there photos?
I'm not really certain why.
Who
he was staying at his grandmother's during the holidays at Thanksgiving. He slept in too late on Thanksgiving morning. He decided to prank his family by grabbing a guitar. We're told birthday-suited Bieber went right up to his grandmother and started belting out some impromptu lyrics like, I love you, Grandma. How are you? Hello, Grandma. We're told Grandma thought it was funny. Wow, Grandma's got kind of a low comedy bar, apparently. Okay. At least he didn't pee in a bucket and hit her house, so that's...
there's that.
That's a happier ending.
As far as we know.
As far as we know. All right. Oh, dear God, the ShamWow guy.
Mm-hmm.
I've met him. I wonder if he knows the Wax Fat guy.
Ow!
You're going to love my nuts.
Ow!
Has he been swimming in Sweden?
He better not be co-swimming because...
Swedish fish bite back.
Right. The testicle-biting fish in Sweden. They would love them. ShamWow guy is an ex-Scientologist who says Leah Remini's life is in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh. He said, you don't attack the Church of Scientology and get away with it, not by a long shot. So says one famous ex-Scientologist, Vince, the ShamWow guy.
Vince Ofer.
Right.
Ofer.
Who tells TMZ Leah Remini is lucky she's still alive. He called her move brave that she left. And
Yeah. And she filed a missing persons report on
the founder's wife.
Yes. She's oppressive and good.
Right.
Suppressive, whatever.
He said he couldn't say much more. He values his life, and he wasn't kidding. And you said you have to see how scared this guy is.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pinning the e-meter, Jim, for sure.
I miss seeing his infomercials.
Do you?
Yes,
I do.
Funny.
They were funny.
Okay.
I actually auditioned for him.
They had Vim.
Movie.
And
Vigor.
Yes.
This is a girl left in my own heart. Jennifer Lawrence made fart jokes and then won the Oscar.
Huh? Okay.
Jennifer Lawrence's cover interview for the September issue of Vogue, just about the best thing ever, if only because it includes the Oscar-winning actress asking of the magazine's reporter, should we just get drunk? the director says, I remember Bradley Cooper and I saying, is this kid even paying attention because she's goofing around or eating my potato chips or making fart jokes, and then all of a sudden she comes in and bam.
Hmm.
But this is Gawker. J-Law, from fart jokes and potato chips to winning an Oscar, no wonder she beat Meryl. She is awesome. She's awesome in that movie.
I still haven't seen that.
She drinks and tells fart jokes. What's not to love?
I liked her in Winter's Bone.
Nah, I did not see that.
That was a very good movie.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of drinking, Lindsay Lohan is reportedly begging her mom to go to rehab.
Wow. And she said, no, no, no.
Right. That's what Dina said. According to reports, the 27-year-old is desperately trying to get her mother to get help. But Dina refuses to listen. She could talk to her hand, but there's a drink in that hand, so.
Sure.
Okay. I drink, therefore I am.
Something tells me she enjoys a glass of Chardonnay.
You think?
I think.
Or five.
Or five. Or ten.
I think perhaps something a little stronger. All right. Halle Berry.
Oh, that's water.
Halle Berry, Jim, was told to be sexier when she was a Bond girl.
Really?
Yeah. She was. You probably don't recall that shot when she emerged from the water in the orange bikini.
Was it orange?
Oh, my God.
What bikini?
It was reminiscent of Ursula Andress emerging from the water in the very first.
In Die Another Day.
This Ursula Andress.
The 2002's Die Another Day, right.
Well, she was Ursula Andress was in Dr. No, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
They kept saying, can you be sexier? And I was like shouting back at them, this is all the sexy I got. I'm going to get hip dysplasia if I try to make it any sexier. It's true. You could throw a hip out.
Being sexy?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Kennedy family not happy finally about QVC selling the Jackie O collection of cheap jewelry. Mm. Yeah, they're probably not. They're disappointed, not amused by the whole thing. There is tacky jewelry, watches, and sunglasses being sold on QVC as the Jacqueline Kennedy collection.
Oh, really?
That's sick.
I would say Jackie would be caught dead, but you know what I'm saying. Not in that stuff. All right. What did we learn this week? That you can buy a purse for $38,000.
Sure.
Well, you can if you're Oprah. But presumably somebody can.
That would buy tuition for one of her interns.
Right. Kanye West just bought two of these crazy armored $1 million SUVs. Have you seen these?
I bet they get great mileage.
Yes, I bet you they do. He bought two, Jim, you're a car guy, Darts Promberon armored SUVs from Latvia. Seriously?
Latvia?
Right.
They make cars there?
Promberon. I haven't even heard of this.
Promberon.
It's an armored SUV based on their Mercedes G-Class. They have great options like, quote-unquote, fake whale penis leather and jewel-encrusted snake ornaments.
If you're going for the whale penis leather, why are you going for the fake whale penis leather? Why don't you just go for the real thing?
It seems like for $1 million, you could get the real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says it right here. $1 million Latvian truck comes with jewel-encrusted snake and fake whale penis. It's the year of the snake in China. That means it's time for automakers to start pandering to the hugely expanding Chinese market. Wow. Oh, it's the thing that Sacha Baron Cohen drove in Borat. Like, I thought it was a joke, but it's not. They can retail for around $400,000, but the way Kanye has his...
tricked out?
Right. Come to about $1 million a piece.
I hope it has a good sound system that you can hook your iPod up to.
Well, he's Kanye. You would think so. All right. They say there aren't any details on what exactly will be in the cars. I'd expect it will have a number of pompous... whole features and a soft seat for Kim Kardashian to be all comfy in. All right. So that's what you do when you make that much money. That's what you do.
But you only get the...
$1 million SUV.
No, whales were harmed.
Yeah, but you only get the Naugahyde whale penis.
Fake whale penis. Right. Exactly. Ricardo Montalban wouldn't even advertise for that.
Crushed velour. Corinthian leather penis.
Exactly. All right. We opened the show talking about the stop and frisk. I think it's important because it ties in all the issues we've been talking about for a while about, you know, the Trayvon Martin case and racial profiling, stuff with the NSA about how much security, how much privacy. Michael Bloomberg says he will appeal.
We go to where the reports of crime are. Those, unfortunately, happen to be poor neighborhoods and minority neighborhoods.
Yeah, see, I'm all with him on the getting the guns, because you know I'm a well-known gun grabber.
You are.
And then he goes too far. I'm with him about obesity being a huge problem, and then he goes all nanny state with the big gulps stuff.
But that's to take care of the obesity problem.
Right, I know, but I'm just saying, and he's Republican, technically. Okay.
Now, did you like the calorie count on every menu?
Yes, I think that. Yes, that's just information.
Yes.
Ray Kelly, New York City.
There were 7,363 fewer murders in New York City compared to the 11 years prior to the mayor taking office. And if history is any guide, those lives saved were overwhelmingly the lives of young men of color.
Yeah, we've had a fair amount of personal stories of racial profiling this morning on the phones, and I'm sure we'll have more. 1-800-STEF-1-2, the phone number. We will continue this discussion on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Join the party. 1-800-STEF-1-2.
Stephanie Miller.
Why don't they do what they say, say what they mean? One thing leads to another. Tell me something wrong. I know I listen to them. One thing leads to another. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 48 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Jim in Nashville, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how you doing, Steph?
Good, go ahead.
I'm in Tennessee, and I just wanted to let some people know something. Maybe Nurse Jackie can say something about this and check me out. I don't understand what's going on. My wife is a ICU nurse, and she used to be dedicated to one patient in ICU.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because the governor here refuses to handle Obamacare, he refuses to implement it, those nurses get three patients now. They're killing them. They're killing the nurses, not to mention killing the patients. How do you go from 8 hours a day surveillance to 4 hours and expect
Jackie, if you're listening, call us. I'm not sure what that has to do, though, with affordable care. Tell me.
Well, they say, yeah, they do not get to share in the Medicare if they don't implement Obamacare. They lose a lot of federal things. That's why I was asking, maybe Jackie can check that out for my wife and I. She's confused, and that it's killing her.
Yeah, that her patient load is going way up.
Oh, yeah, and they're saying that's what they're saying anyway, because they're losing revenue in the Obamacare system because they won't implement it here in Tennessee because of our governor. And I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I mean, if I get sick, I'm leaving Tennessee. It's a shame. There's great hospitals here. You got Vanderbilt.
Hang on one second, Jim. Hang on one second. I believe we have Nurse Jackie. Nurse Jackie, hello. Paging
Hi,
Nurse Jackie.
I caught the tail end of that. Is he talking about Medicaid?
Medicaid, that's it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And losing money, how? I'm a little confused because what they're not doing.
That's what I'm confused about too, Jackie. That's why I was hoping you can maybe clear that up.
They're telling. Repeat for me real quickly. They're telling your wife what?
They're telling her that because of Obamacare not being implemented here in Tennessee by our Republican governor,
mm-hmm.
that they're losing revenue, losing federal benefits because they won't share in this. Now, I don't know that much about it.
What they're talking about is that the states have the option to decide whether or not they want to participate in the expansion of Medicaid, which is the opportunity to get health care coverage for people who make less than 133% of the poverty level. So it's basically access to health care for poor people. And the states have the option of whether or not they want to participate in that. There are a lot of states with Republican governors where they've decided not to participate. There's no good reason why they shouldn't participate because the federal government will cover 100% of the cost for the first 3 years and then 90% of the cost for the years after that. So it's strictly political, and they may be losing consumers or patients, consumers is a bad word for that, patients and revenue over the years because you've got a lot of people who won't have access to medical care, but it's strictly a Republican governor decision or Republican legislature decision, and it's not certainly not the healthcare system to blame because they're
making it
available.
Jim, you were saying your wife is a nurse, though? Isn't that how you started?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, she's a nurse in the family, and she's been a nurse for 25 years and has never experienced anything like this.
I think Jackie missed your original point. You said your wife's a nurse, and she usually had one patient per what?
Right, in intensive care.
Uh-huh.
She's ICU nurse, and there's a lot of times where they have complete observation of one person, 24-hour, whatever. At this time now, they can't do that. They have and in fact, the hospital, the doctors called and complained, and the hospital said, well, we studied it, and we found out that you can handle 2.5 patients.
So she's having to handle 3 now. But Jackie, I'm not sure what was your question in terms of the Affordable Care Act with that?
Well, I was wondering if that has anything to do with the governor here in Tennessee. Does that have anything to do with the affordable?
It sounds to me.
I'm not saying thanks Obama or anything, but I'm just curious. I don't know what's going on.
It sounds
and my poor
to me
wife
like
don't either.
Two different problems. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. It sounds to me like two different problems. One is Tennessee's going to have the problem with a lack of expansion of access to health care for people who need it most.
And
they've also got the problem, it sounds like, from just the ongoing sort of hospital insurance churning out of patients and trying to maximize their profits, right? I mean, it sounds to me
Absolutely.
That that's what's going on, is they're trying to get as many people in as possible to make as much money as possible,
both
on the hospital side and the insurance side. So to me, those are two separate, they're two separate issues. You certainly should be concerned about the fact that the Republican legislature and the Republican governor don't want to expand Medicaid because there's no good reason not to do it.
That's what I was thinking too, but I didn't know if it had anything at all to do with Obamacare.
They may say it does, but it doesn't. There's no logical connection there.
Yeah.
I thought so.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Hey, Leslie. Uh-oh, now you've made a mistake of calling. Leslie in Asheville. Leslie in Asheville wants to talk to Jackie. Hey, Leslie.
Hey, I have read the law. I know what it is. In states that don't expand Medicaid, the rules are going to still apply. A lot of the rules are still going to apply because the law was written assuming that everyone would expand Medicaid. So under the expansion, under the Affordable Care Act, hospitals are going to receive lower reimbursements for indigent care. And it doesn't matter whether you expand Medicaid or not. If you don't expand Medicaid as a hospital, you're going to get less money from the federal government for indigent care. So hospitals are going to be in big trouble in states that do not expand Medicaid. Hospitals want that expansion because they're going to lose a whole lot of money, and we're going to start to see hospitals close.
I think that that's a little bit of an exaggeration. I don't think
hospitals No, ma'am, it is not.
Because now when
no,
they're
it's not.
Treating, well, they're doing treating
no.
patients. Okay, well, let's just yell
because they're going to lose that federal
that seems
money.
Like a good argument.
Okay, hang on. Go ahead, Jackie. We're going to have to let her go so we can hear your answer. Go ahead.
She just yelled no.
No!
No!
No, she didn't.
All right, go ahead, Jackie.
Well, she had to go and wash up for surgery anyway.
Yes.
No, I mean, that doesn't make any sense because what happens now is people go to the emergency room without health insurance, and hospitals have to cover the cost of people who don't have health insurance through charity care, or insurance companies are doing it by jacking up rates for everybody else. So, you know, if we have a problem in this country with not being able to cover the cost or not getting enough payment out of Medicaid, compare that to not getting any payment. Hospitals would have gone bankrupt a long time ago.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make any sense how all of a sudden we're going to go bankrupt because they're getting less money off of Medicaid.
Yep. Jan in Chicago is a nurse. She wants to chime in. Hey, Jan, go ahead. You're on with Jackie.
Hey. Oh, hi. Boy, God, I love your show, and I love Jackie, and I love Medicare, and I love Social Security.
Oh, I love you, too.
You're happy clappy. Go ahead.
I'm a retired ICU nurse, and after working in the ICU, I also worked in a call center. And I will tell you that I agree with a lot of the problems with the cutting money, but also the hospitals are all being run by MBAs now. They have no medical knowledge or expertise, and they're loading patients up. This has been going on since 1998. They load people up. They load the nurses on the floors up with patients in the ICU. It used to be 1-to-1. Now it's 2-to-1. Then it's 3-to-1. And in the call center, I work for a call center, 6 nurses handled 50 different physicians' calls. And at the end of the day, there would be 200 calls left over that were not addressed. And I think it's terrible. It's pitiful, and I'm glad I'm retired. It's just very stressful.
It reminds me of Jackie's Healthcare Corner. We have a bleed over calls, therapists, right? Every time we have you on.
It's terrible. I think it's a lot of hospitals and nurses are run by. My immediate supervisor was an MBA, not a nurse.
Yeah, well, you know who is responsible for a lot of that? Rick Scott, now the now governor of Florida. That's what he did. He gobbled up a bunch of hospitals and then cut all of the benefits of them to try to maximize profits. He ended up cutting patient care in order to make all his money. So,
Explain to me again why he's in the governor's mansion and not in, what's the word I'm looking
prison?
For? Prison,
jail.
Right.
He was never officially charged with anything, even though everybody around him got in trouble.
Who is supposed to be charging him? Who is derelict in their duty of charging them?
Well, he was released by the Frist brothers, of all people, of his duties before the actual charges came down.
Okay.
So he got away with being able to say he was never charged with anything, but it was like, you know, everybody within the organization knew what was going on. There was no way he didn't have any idea what was going on.
Huh.
And it was a mess. But, you know, he bought his way into the governor's office, so that's good.
The important thing is I made you really late for the news center. Love you.
Love you, too.
See you in a couple of minutes. Okay. That's it for us. We will see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.